The only thing prohibiting transit in the Straits right now is Iran shooting at shipping. It is open for transit should Iran not do that.
Oh, that's all. Everything's fine as long as Iran should not do that. Why worry?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Totally cool.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Everything's fine.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara. We'll be talking about you today, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. And yes, we also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites blanketing planet Earth. Not that it needs one this week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us. Well, maybe a comfort blanket. Maybe we could use a comfort blanket this week, Desi Doyen, across the globe.
Maybe a cooling comfort blanket.
A cooling comfort blanket, especially with the week we are staring down right now out here in Southern California. Anyway, welcome to the Bradcast. Delighted to have you here. Folks in Illinois, they are enjoying their first chance to respond at the ballot box to Donald Trump's recent, if arguably failed, assault on the good people of Chicago last year with his immigration crackdown, met with protests and pushback, and eventually court orders to prevent Trump from deploying the military into the streets of the Windy City. Illinois holds its statewide primary on Tuesday this week for the critical 2026 midterm elections. We will, of course, have noteworthy coverage as the week continues. In the meantime, the nation and the world's top story continues to be Donald Trump's unlawful war of distraction from the Epstein files and other domestic woes as that conflict continues to spread, as it grinds into its third deadly, chaotic week with no apparent end in sight or, in fact, no purpose in sight. The world as a whole continues to pay a hefty price for Trump's so-called excursion into the Middle East in many ways, including the quickly skyrocketing price of oil, which has translated into a price spike at pumps across the U.S. and now here in Southern California with a very real and direct threat made by the administration late last week to our oceans, our beaches, our wildlife, our tourist industry, and much more. We've got a guest standing by with disturbing details on that momentarily. But since we spoke late last week with you, on Saturday, Iran urged people to evacuate the Middle East's busiest port and two others in the United Arab Emirates, openly threatening a neighboring country's non-U.S. assets for the first time as its war with the U.S. and Israel entered a third week. Tehran said the U.S. had used, quote, ports, docks, and hideouts in the UAE to launch strikes on Karg Island, home to the main terminal handling Iran's oil exports. It urged people to leave areas where it said U.S. forces were sheltering. Iran's foreign minister told MS Now that the U.S. attacked Karg Island and Abu Musa Island from two locations in the UAE, including a place, quote, very close to Dubai, calling that dangerous and saying Iran, quote, will try to be careful not to attack any populated area there. Iran has fired hundreds of missiles and drones at the Arab Gulf neighbors during the war, but it has said that it was targeting U.S. assets, even as hits or attempts were reported on civilian targets or civilian sites, such as airports and oil fields in the region. As we go to air, just minutes ago, Al Jazeera is reporting that a drone has struck the top floors of the Baghdad's Al-Rashid Hotel, that is home to the EU and Saudi diplomatic missions. On Friday, Donald Trump said the U.S., quote, obliterated military sites on Karg Island and that oil infrastructure there would be next if Tehran continues to interfere with ships' passage through the Strait of Hormuz, where one-fifth of the global oil supplies usually transit. Almost no oil or liquefied natural gas has been able to navigate the strait since the U.S. began its attack with Israel just over 2 weeks ago now. Iran's parliamentary speaker has said strikes against the country's oil infrastructure would provoke a new level of retaliation. As global anxiety over oil prices and supplies as it soars, both the anxiety and the prices, Trump said on Saturday that he hopes that China and France and Japan, South Korea, the UK, and others would send warships to the Strait of Hormuz, quote, to keep it open and safe, underscoring reporting that suggests that the U.S., or at least the U.S. president, had not anticipated the incredibly predictable likelihood that Iran would shut down the strait if its leadership faced an existential threat, as they are now. To date, none of those nations has expressed an intent to answer Trump's plea, though Britain said that it was discussing with allies a, quote, range of options to secure shipping. But no worries, all is well in the Gulf. That, according to former Fox News Weekend host turned Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, who said, all is basically well in the Strait of Hormuz, operating as normal, well, except for one little thing.
The only thing prohibiting transit in the straits right now is Iran shooting at shipping. It is open for transit should Iran not do that.
Yeah, other than that, everything is fine. I don't know why the media, the fake news, is such a panic in attacking Donald Trump right now. A missile struck a helipad inside the U.S. embassy compound in Baghdad, Iraq, over the weekend. The embassy complex, one of the largest U.S. diplomatic facilities in the world, has been repeatedly targeted now by rockets and drones fired by Iran-aligned militias. The State Department again warned citizens in Iraq to leave, quote, now. And I guess that was before Monday's attack on the Al-Rashid Hotel. And he's told them that they should leave by land because commercial flights are not available. Again, another indication that the U.S. was wildly, wildly, arguably criminally unprepared for the totally predictable responses from an Iran under siege. Meanwhile, with more than 3 million Iranians dislocated by the bombing in and around Tehran, Lebanon's humanitarian crisis also deepened, with over 800 people now killed there and 850,000 displaced as Israel launched new waves of strikes against Iran-backed Hezbollah militants in southern Lebanon. And a U.S. official said Friday that 2,500 more Marines with the 31st Marine Expeditionary Unit and the amphibious assault ship, the USS Tripoli, were being sent to the Middle East, adding more potential ground troops to the military's already largest buildup of warships and aircraft in the region in decades. Marine expeditionary units can conduct amphibious landings, but also specialize in bolstering security at embassies, evacuating civilians, and providing disaster relief. The U.S. Department of Defense on Saturday identified six more U.S. service members who died during the conflict so far. In this case, when a military refueling aircraft they were aboard crashed late last week while supporting operations against Iran. The crash in western Iraq followed an unspecified incident involving two aircraft in, quote, friendly airspace, according to U.S. Central Command. The other plane landed safely. The ripple effect of all of this is being felt in other ways back here at home as the war grinds on and continues to upend energy markets, supply chains worldwide. As we reported last week, as the global price of oil began to spike, the administration began to scramble to seek ideas that could be used somehow. Please, pretty please, give them a plan to bring down the cost of oil that had spiked to over $100 a barrel and was rapidly increasing the cost of gasoline at the pumps here at home, now up anywhere from 70 to 80 cents or more a gallon since the war began. That number is likely to rise. Among those efforts was Trump's supposedly temporary lifting of sanctions against Russian oil, which had taken effect. Those sanctions had taken effect after Russia's war of aggression on Ukraine, with sanctions lifted against Russia now, despite reports that Vladimir Putin's military and intelligence services have actually been helping Iran to target otherwise secret U.S. assets in the region, including service members. So Putin is helping Iran to target Americans, and our American president is lifting sanctions against the sale of Russia's oil to try to keep the oil prices down. This is all going brilliantly, isn't it? Trump has also called for the release of millions of gallons from the barrels from the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserves after criticizing Joe Biden for having done the very same thing when he was trying to lower the cost of oil as it spiked after Russia's attack on Ukraine. And now the Trump administration says it may suspend maritime shipping requirements in the U.S., under a more than century-old law known as the Jones Act. The act requires the goods hauled between U.S. ports be moved only on U.S.-flagged vessels. It was passed in 1920. That law aims to protect the American shipping sector, but it's also faced criticism over the years for slowing the delivery of goods, including critical aid during time of crisis, and it's often blamed for making gas, in particular, more expensive. The White House confirmed now that it is looking into waiving Jones Act requirements in a theoretically temporary measure that would arrive amid wider efforts to counter steep oil prices and cargo disruptions due to war. And as we move from the Middle East to the U.S., we draw our focus tighter still to here on the West Coast, where U.S. Energy Secretary and former fracking CEO Chris Wright directed a Texas-based oil and gas company on Friday to restore operations in the waters off of Southern California, operations that were damaged by a horrible 2015 oil spill, invoking the Defense Production Act in order to do so. Restoring Sable Offshore Corporation's Santa Ynez unit and pipeline off of Santa Barbara supposedly aims to address supply disruption risks, according to a department news release. That unit includes three oil rigs in federal waters off the Southern California coast, offshore and onshore pipelines, and the Las Flores Canyon processing facility, which can produce about 50,000 barrels of oil per day and would replace nearly 1.5 million barrels of foreign crude each month, according to administration officials. Wright said in a statement, quote, "The Trump administration remains committed to putting all Americans and their energy security first," before adding, quote, "Unfortunately, some state leaders have not adhered to those same principles, with potentially disastrous consequences not just for their residents, but also our national security." Today's order, he claimed, will strengthen America's oil supply and restore a pipeline system vital to our national security and defense, ensuring that West Coast military installations have the reliable energy critical to military readiness. Aha! So if you oppose reopening these facilities here in Southern California, facilities which have terribly harmed the Southern California region, well, if you're opposed to that, it must be because you hate the troops. What, you don't want them to get energy? California Governor Gavin Newsom condemned the move, saying in a statement, quote, "This is an attempt to illegally restart a pipeline whose operators are facing criminal charges and are prohibited by multiple court orders from restarting." California, he said, will not stand by while the Trump administration attempts to sacrifice our coastal communities, our environment, and our $51 billion coastal economy. The Trump administration and Sable, the governor said, are defying multiple court orders, and we will see them back in court. In January, California sued the federal government for approving the Houston-based Sable's plan to restart pipelines along our coast. Democratic State Attorney General Rob Bonta said at the time that the state oversees the pipelines through Santa Barbara and Kern counties, and the federal government, quote, has no right to usurp California's regulatory authority. Late on Friday, the Center for Biological Diversity issued its own condemnation of the administration's announced intent to invoke the Defense Production Act to reopen the shuttered facilities after the Texas-based Sable Offshore Corp's 2015 disaster, which released about 450,000 gallons of heavy crude into the waters near Santa Barbara at Refugio State Beach. The spill heavily coated some 7 miles of coastline conservatively and spread tar balls over more than 150 miles down the coast on the beaches, harming birds, marine mammals, fish, coastal and subtidal habitats, and threatening endangered species. The disaster also caused major economic losses in the region as beaches and fisheries were closed right before the Memorial Day holiday that year because of this fine mess. Quote, "This is a revolting power grab by an extremist president," said Talia Nimmer, an attorney at the Center for Biological Diversity, noting, quote, "Trump is misusing this Cold War era law in order just to help a Texas oil company to skirt vital state laws that protect our coastline, and Californians," she said, "will pay the price." Joining us now is Talia Nimmer, staff attorney at the Center for Biological Diversity's Climate Law Institute, where she works on litigation and policy to help reduce fossil fuels and advance clean air, long critical efforts for those of us here in California, and of course, increasingly so across the nation and the globe. Talia Nimmer, thanks for joining us today on the broadcast. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Brad.
Delighted to have you here. I tried to sort of quickly summarize the 2015 spill at Refugio Beach, but for those who were here at the time, it was a very big deal and a very big mess. Before we move on to what the administration is trying to do here, did I accurately characterize that spill, its effects, and so forth? Did I overblow it or underplay it?
Oh, no, absolutely. If anything, you underplayed it. This was one of California's most devastating oil spills. Resulted in the death of thousands of birds and marine mammals, cost millions of dollars, and really had devastating impacts on the community that they're still reeling with today. Mm-hmm. So restarting these idled and failed pipelines is really a big deal that puts our coast and our wildlife in great jeopardy and great danger, and really, you know, should not be permitted without ensuring that our coastal community is safe.
And that spill in 2015 was really just one of a series that we've had over the years. And as bad as the 2015 disaster was, it was all pretty small, pretty tame, compared to the 1969 blowout in this very same area off Santa Barbara. It resulted in millions of gallons of crude blanketing at least 35 miles of coastline. It led directly to a bunch of new state and federal laws, including the creation of the EPA at the time under Richard Nixon, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Santa Barbara has been a particularly vulnerable region, which has suffered, numerous oil spills, the two that you just mentioned, which is why these very pipelines have been shut down since 2015, and in order to keep the community and our wildlife safe. We definitely are very opposed and will be challenging the restart of the pipelines, which we actually just got word have been restarted this weekend.
Yikes. We'll get to that in a moment. Point being, we do have some experience. I mean, even if, you know, and I hate to say this on a national radio show, but if you go to the beaches sort of up and down from Santa Barbara, you're probably going to get some tar on your feet, maybe on your clothes, as these tar balls are still washing in all of these years later. So we do have some experience here Southern California with this, and reason to be concerned about restarting this so-called Santa Ynez unit back up. I mentioned the Sable Company. They're facing criminal charges, Talia. What do those charges comprise of, and have they fully restored the damage from the 2015 spill, much less, you know, fully repaired the oil infrastructure that Trump apparently wants to restart off our coast and apparently has as of Friday? What do we know about first the criminal charges there for Sable?
Yeah, so Sable Offshore Company Corporation is a newly formed company that was formed really strictly for the purpose of reopening these pipelines and oil operations. And in its short existence, it's racked up numerous criminal charges and violations from state agencies, including a criminal complaint with five felony charges that it's illegally discharged fill and other pollution into our waterways. It's also racked up a cease and desist order, an $18 million administrative penalty from the California Coastal Commission for conducting unlawful repair work on these pipelines. And to answer your question these pipelines are safe.
Hang on a second, Talia. On those five felony charges, are those charges that Sable themselves, because I understand this was previously owned by ExxonMobil, and I guess they owned the pipeline when it ruptured in 2015. Are these crimes that ExxonMobil carried out when they had ownership and now Sable has sort of taken them on after taking over the infrastructure? Are these actually crimes that Sable has carried out on their own since taking over, I think, in 2024?
Yeah, these allegations are being charged directly against Sable in its short existence. In fact, you know, even Santa Barbara County Board of Supervisors has determined that Sable is not a company that can safely operate these pipelines due to its really checkered history and track record of violating the law and state requirements in its short existence. So this is really not a company that's demonstrated that it can adequately and safely run these pipelines that pose such a dangerous risk to our health and our communities and our wildlife.
And I cut you off mid your answer there about the restoration that they have done since the 2015 spill and the repair work on that infrastructure that now they're firing back up.
Yeah. So actually in October of last year, the Office of the State Fire Marshal determined that there are still further repairs that are needed before these pipelines can safely operate, which have not been done to date, despite Sable having turned on the plugs this weekend. So, to your question about whether these pipelines have been determined to be safe to operate and have, are up to standards, they definitely are not. And that is a huge risk to all of us.
And yet they have turned it on against the authority of the state, presumably under the authority of the federal government. I know the state is still challenging this, and you've mentioned several different jurisdictions that are saying no, that it's not ready to reopen. What exactly is the federal authority here? Let's talk about the Federal Defense Production Act. Has it ever been applied like this before? My understanding was that it was used during wartime, if we need to, you know, create more tanks or weapons or something that we need to, you know, do during wartime. Has it ever been applied like this before in a way that basically forces production in the fossil fuel industry, much less over the wishes of the state in doing so?
No, I mean, this is a really radical and unprecedented way of using this law, the Defense Production Act, to benefit an individual oil company that's repeatedly broken the law and to greenlight a single oil project that California doesn't want or need. And, you know, this is just another example of a radical power grab by the administration. It sets an extremely dangerous precedent for all state laws. It doesn't just put our coast at risk, but it also puts every state in risk because they can wake up tomorrow to find that projects they don't want are also being greenlighted and causing major risk to their communities. So it's a huge infringement on state sovereignty, and it's really quite unprecedented. And we think courts will definitely want to hear this and any challenges that come about from it.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems that the Defense Production Act is sort of pretextual here. My understanding is that the and I know you've been working on the legal case, and we'll get to what the Center for Biological Diversity is doing in that regard in a moment. But my understanding is that the Trump administration has been targeting exactly this, reopening these platforms in Southern California and elsewhere, but specifically in Southern California, that this has been a goal for a while, and that really this the war in Iran now and the holdup at the Strait of Hormuz is sort of a pretext for what they wanted to do anyway in now declaring the Defense Production Act as a means to do it. Am I off base on that? Because this doesn't seem to have come out of nowhere.
It certainly seems like, you know, the administration has done everything in the power to set this up to allow this project to move forward. And, you know, saying that this project is going to lower gas prices is just a really weak justification for allowing this project to move forward, because the oil from these pipelines would be a drop in the bucket. It's estimated that, you know, only 0.05% of the state's total oil in production would come from these pipelines, and that would really have no impact on lowering global oil prices. So the notion that California or the county wants or needs this, or that it's beneficial for, you know, supplies and necessary military aid, yeah, is really just incorrect.
Well, that's because you hate the troops, Talia Nimmer. When the Center for Biological Diversity says in its statement released on Friday that the, quote, action follows a recent legal opinion from the Department of Justice, presumably its own, that's the Trump's own DOJ, I presume, asserting that the president could use the act to preempt state law and authority as well as other barriers to restart the embattled project. Has the DPA ever, to your knowledge, been used in contradiction? I mean, I suppose, you know, it is used to take over certain things, to, you know, force GM to build buses during wartime or whatever it is. But has the DPA ever been used, to your knowledge, in contradiction, or I guess, you know, in this case, direct violation or contravention of state laws prohibiting any particular action, to your knowledge? This seems unprecedented, but I'm not a historian on this.
You know, that's not exactly clear, but what is definitely clear is that it definitely has not been used to greenlight a single oil project or to give a single oil company permission to override state law in state orders that, you know, directly prohibit this company from restarting these pipelines. So it is, in that sense, it is very, very unprecedented and a radical overreach of the Act's limitations and approvals.
And you guys, and there's a whole bunch of lawsuits, even before this happened, even before Friday, when their Trump administration apparently turned on the spigots, the oil spigots in our waters here off of Southern California. But there's a whole lot of lawsuits going on sort of in every direction. I know that the Center for Biological Diversity has a pending lawsuit against the state of California and the state's office of the state fire marshal. Regarding the restart that Sable has wanted to do for some time, has Sable been attempting to restart this unit even before the recent federal backing for the action? And what is your lawsuit contending there?
Yeah, so Sable's been, you know, moving in every direction to try to restart these pipelines in defiance of all state requirements for quite some time. But one of the lawsuits we have in state court challenges the Office of the State Fire Marshal's approval of waivers from pipeline safety requirements to ensure that these corroded pipelines are protected from corrosion, which was one of the primary reasons why these pipelines spilled in 2015.
Right.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no. I was saying that's right. It was corrosion. It was a corroding pipelines that fell apart that led to that. And now we're not even making sure that there's not existing corrosion that has been that is still there lying in wait for another 2015 style disaster.
Right. And that's one of the reasons why these pipelines are so dangerous, because they're not adequately protected from corrosion, which was the very reason why they spilled and ruptured in 2015, devastating our coast and our wildlife. So to turn them on now without making sure that they're safe is really quite appalling.
Now, Sable actually did, even before Friday, and I don't know if the Friday actions have reopened everything here, but as I understand it, Sable actually did restart one of its three oil platforms that were previously owned, as I said, by ExxonMobil when the 2015 rupture happened. They were purchased by Sable in, I believe, 2024, and they had already restarted one of their three oil platforms even prior to Friday last year, about 6 miles off the coast in federal waters, I believe. But your group has sued to stop and I guess the suit is still ongoing, to stop the other two from going back into production. Have you received preliminary injunctions on that from the court to prevent that from happening prior to what happened on Friday?
Yeah, so in that case that I was just talking about, challenging the approvals that waived corrosion pipeline safety requirements, the court actually did issue a preliminary injunction saying that Sable is not allowed to restart the pipelines until it has all necessary approvals to do so. And we actually have a court hearing tomorrow morning where we're going into that courtroom and asking her to immediately shut down the pipelines that have been restarted without all these necessary approvals and in defiance of this preliminary injunction. So that is just one of the many violations that Sable has committed in restarting these pipelines. And we are hoping and are hopeful that the court will agree and order that these pipelines be immediately shut down for violation of the preliminary injunction.
Is that state court or federal court that you're in challenging the state authority to essentially allow Sable to reopen?
That particular case and preliminary injunction is in state court in Santa Barbara Superior Court, which is where we will be appearing tomorrow morning, asking the court to immediately order to shut down operation of these pipelines.
And is it confirmed that, in fact, all of this was essentially immediately reopened on Friday? I mean, as I understand it, Chris Wright issued that order on Friday. Are you saying that this entire operation, all three of these oil platforms and all the pipelines that run offshore and onshore in between them that make up the whatever it's called, the Santa Ynez unit, that all of those are now open?
It's unclear exactly what's open and what's not at this point, but what is clear is that Just this morning, Sable issued a press release saying that they have begun transporting oil through these pipelines, meaning that the pipelines have been restarted in defiance of state requirements and state law. So that is a big deal that really puts everyone, especially our wildlife and our coast, at danger, in which we will fight to ensure is not allowed.
And another lawsuit also already pending, already underway. The state of California, who you're suing, the state of California is suing, in this case, the federal government. After the Trump administration had moved to seize control of the pipeline from the state and issued an emergency permit to restart the pipelines, despite continuing defects in the design that we talked about. So there was already a lawsuit, as I understand it, underway between the state against the federal government. Was there no injunction there, or had that not gotten to that point in the process yet?
Yeah, so that actually is part of a case where it is consolidated with our case, which makes similar challenges and assertions that, you know, the federal government wrestled jurisdiction improperly away from the state. And although we did seek an emergency injunction in that case, fortunately, the court did not grant it.
Did not grant an injunction in that case. Well, great. Well done, court, because now it's up and apparently open and... Talia Nimmer, you also suggested that what is happening here is really the result of backroom deals between Sable and the Trump administration. You suggested as much in, or at least the Center for Biological Diversity does in their press release from Friday. Do you have information on that? And at this point, is there any sort of backroom dealing, is that even unlawful anymore? You've got a president now who's been told by the Supreme Court that he can break any law he wants in the course of his normal presidenting duties. So if there was some sort of backroom discussion or backroom conversations, A, do we have any evidence of that? And B, even if we did, is there anything unlawful about that at this point?
We're definitely looking into what all transpired, but what I can say is that this whole Defense Production Act invocation was at the request of Sable, and that much is confirmed in the order itself, which references that in December 12th, Sable actually made a request of the federal administration to invoke the Defense Production Act and authorize their unlawful restart of these pipelines. So we do know that this is actually all coming from Sable. And we are looking further into what we can do to obtain more information and assess all legal challenges.
And they are, again, they are the only ones for the moment that you know of who are affected by this order. They're the only company, or is there a series of oil operations around the country that have been restarted with that same declaration by the Energy Secretary last week?
As of this time, I can say that I know for sure that this has impacted this particular oil operation. It very well may have impacts that are ripple out beyond this individual project, but at this time, this is the one that we know of for certain.
Well, I am delighted, at least, that biological diversity, the Center of Biological Diversity, is at least on the case, is already in court. I'm glad to hear that the state of California is as well. We'll see how this goes and when the next bill happens. Talia Nimmer, she is staff attorney at the Climate Law Institute at the Center for Biological Diversity. You can check more of their work out at biologicaldiversity.org. Talia, really appreciate you joining us today. Very helpful, very enlightening, and please keep us up to date as this moves forward. Go get 'em, Talia.
Thanks so much, and thanks for having me and taking the time. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you, Talia. All right. Well, let's take a quick break here. We'll come back perhaps with some of your calls if you would like to ring in on not just what is going on here in Southern California, as we've just discussed with Talia Nimmer, but anywhere else around the globe as the conflict, as the war on Iran continues. It was supposed to be, you know, just, what was it, Desi Doyen, 4 or 5 days? That was originally what we were told.
Well, yeah, it was supposed to be 4 or 5 days, yeah, then it was a week, then it was 2 weeks. Yeah. You know, it's the endlessly repeating 2 weeks.
Yeah, don't worry, it'll end soon. Everything will be fine, and then the oil prices will come down, and everything will be as if it never happened. That's what Donald Trump keeps telling us, and why wouldn't he be telling us the truth? Our phone number is 818-985-5735, if you would like to ring in, 818-985-KPFK. I'd love to hear from you when we have the opportunity, as we do today, to open our phone lines. Otherwise, I got some news stories I can get to as well. Either way, give me a shout. 818-985-5735. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
We have to do a little excursion to get rid of mad people, crazy people. We have virtually unlimited ammunition, and we're using it. We're using it. We can go forever.
When are you going to know when it's over?
When I feel it.
Okay.
I feel it in my bones.
Mm-hmm. When he feels it in his bones. How about when he feels it in his bone spurs? Will that also end it? Just asking. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Yeah, there are mad people out there. There are crazy people out there. Unfortunately, they seem to be running the United States of America at this point. 818-985-5735 is our phone number if you would like to ring in. I'd love to hear from you. Once again, my thanks to Talia Nimmer of the Center for Biological Diversity. I do have some other stuff to get to, but it does look like the phones are ringing.
But so, before the phones ring off the hook, I just had a quick point that you know how the Trump administration, as you just covered, is invoking the Defense Production Act to do something that they wanted to do
anyway.
But what they're not doing, they're not using the Defense Production Act to build cheaper, faster, renewable energy, which would also ease at least electricity prices.
Of course.
Because the price of electricity in most states is set by the price of natural gas, which is now spiking because of the conflict, the war in Iran. So using the Defense Production Act for that would actually have a direct and very quick impact on American bills.
Yeah, and to that point, let me just play real, and I know people are calling in, and I'll get to you just momentarily, but I spoke with David Ferris last week, political scientist from the University of from Roosevelt University, about this point in general, and the notion that, you know, Republicans, Donald Trump, they love to say, oh, we're fighting for energy independence. We now have energy independence. Well, never mind that the energy independence that they're talking about actually came under Barack Obama and then under Joe Biden. But once Donald Trump came into office, he gutted all of those renewable energy efforts that were underway that Desi is referring to, and in the bargain has made it much worse now when the cost of oil goes up. I talked about it with David Ferris, who said that energy independence is really a misnomer in this case. It is energy dominance that folks like Donald Trump are after.
I think the Republican Party has fundamentally misunderstood what energy independence means for the whole century. Right? The only way to really extricate ourselves from our economic reliance on oil and other fossil fuels is to pursue the green revolution. Right? Like the more people you get driving electric cars, the more people you get getting off of fossil fuels and you know, wind and solar, all these renewables. But like that's what energy independence is, right? It's not dramatically increasing your own oil production unless you're willing to nationalize it and just like have a, you know, it's like we get all our oil from ourselves, which, you know, can't really just snap your finger and do that. The Republican Party itself has been undermining the very sort of historical transition that would actually make gas prices less important politically in the United States. And so partly as a consequence of their own intransigence about climate change, about the Green Revolution, this is where we are, right? Where we are is gas prices still matter politically in the United States of America because almost everyone still drives a gas-powered car. And oil and petroleum, like, these are inputs into all kinds of other industries that I think most people don't really have, like, a very dim awareness of the fact that, like, oil and petroleum products go into all kinds of, like, fertilizers. I mean, you name it, right? Plastics, right? Like, oil is so deeply embedded in the global economy. No amount of, like, shale oil in North Dakota is going to extract us from that basic predicament until we do the things that Democrats have been talking about for a long time, which is transition our entire economy gradually.
Yep. Yep, that was Professor Political Science Professor David Ferris of Roosevelt University on the broadcast last week, and you can hear that entire interview over at bradblog.com, where you can download it for free. But yeah, that's sort of the point, and the idea that Republicans want, are doing all of this because they want to lower the cost of oil. Well, if you want to lower the cost of oil, then support green renewable energy. Stop cutting the subsidies that were going out to encourage the purchase of electric vehicles that Donald Trump just completely gutted when he came to office for the second time. Gutted manufacturing of other renewables, batteries, wind turbines, solar, and so forth in this country. And now this is the mess we are left with. So if you really want energy dominance, it's not just fossil fuel energy. There's a lot more to that picture, unless you're really not interested in energy dominance, unless you're just interested in fossil fuel industry dominance. 818-985-5735 is our phone number. Leo in East LA. Hey, Leo, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Good afternoon, and thank you for your show.
Thank you, sir. What's on your mind?
Hey, listen. Yes, sir. I have just a little comment to make. I have a world map that I look at, and the Middle East looks like it's in peril because of the fact that the Ukraine war with Russia has been going on, and there's a little town called Zaporizhia that has nuclear power plants. And if you know anything about explosions like Chernobyl, Fukushima, the Black Sea will pay the price that will run into the Mediterranean Sea. And that's my comment for today. We wish you all a happy new year.
Thank you, Leo. I appreciate that. And yeah, the Zaporizhia, and I forget how to say that name, that nuclear plant has been now under Russian control for last couple of years, since pretty early in the war began. And there has always been concerns that a misfire pulls off just a disaster there, like, we have seen in years past. But it's all about the energy, isn't it? 818-985-5735. Let me go to, did I screw this up? There we go. I'll learn how to use this phone one of these days. Let me go to Andrew in the Inland Empire. Hey, Andrew, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Yeah, hey, brother Brad. How are you doing?
I'm all right. What's on your mind, my friend?
Two topics. The first, if I can. The first, following up on what the great co-host Desi Doyen talked about with alternative energy. Two things, in case people haven't heard. China, as far as electric vehicles, China has now is producing an electric car, electric vehicle, that can go over 600 miles and charge in 6 minutes.
Yep.
So revolutionary new battery.
Yep.
And apparently they're not being sold here in the U.S.
Nope.
So we need to fix that somehow.
And they're putting them in their entire line of cars, of BYD cars, beginning with their $20,000 model. 600 plus miles of range on a single charge up in 6 minutes. And we're still out there fighting decades-old wars for oil in the Middle East. It's embarrassing, to be frank.
Exactly. And then, as been reported on the show on KPFK, California Solartopia, there are solar panels you can get now. They're using in Germany and other places. that you can just hang over your balcony and plug directly into your power system and power your appliances and everything in your home.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a great way. You can just buy those panels in the store. You mm-hmm. don't need to install them. You just hang them over your balcony. So we need to go solar. This is a wake-up call. We can take advantage of this craziness going on in the world with oil and put it to our advantage to finally wake up and go solar and go electric vehicles, et cetera, et cetera.
You can put those solar panels, as you mentioned, sort of out over your balcony or something, but how much power they're actually going to give you in order to power your entire house is a separate matter. Desi Doyen, are you familiar with what he's referring to there?
Absolutely. Balcony solar. It is an actual thing. It's moving faster in Europe because, of course, they are very interested in moving more quickly on renewable energy than now in the United States, where Trump is dismantling all of the progress and doing his best to dismantle all of it. But yeah, balcony solar, it's a small photovoltaic, a little solar panel system. You can easily install it. You can plug it into a standard outlet. It makes it solar energy accessible for renters and for homeowners as well. And there is some legislation now on the state level here in California to eliminate all of the barriers in permitting and safety standards and stuff to try to get that moving more quickly through the state so that people can start using it. Now, I don't know about the amount of, I guess it would depend on what kind of array that you're able to install once this law is passed, and if it gets passed and all of these changes are made to make it go faster to install it in your own place. But any kind of solar panel energy that would help defray the costs would be a good thing. That's what people in Europe are finding that it does. If it doesn't take up the entire bill that they have, then it still cuts a good deal of it.
Takes a piece of it, and that's exactly what
every dollar helps.
The infrastructure, what was it called? The IRA, the Infrastructure
Inflation Reduction Act.
Inflation Reduction Act. Is that the that was the Inflation Reduction Act plus the so-called Bipartisan Infrastructure Act had
right.
put money. Giving money, subsidies to people. I can't remember if it was $7,500. I know that was for the electric vehicles, but it was like $13,000 or something to help you put solar on your roof. Donald Trump has gutted all of that since taking office. So if there might have been subsidies to help you go buy balcony solar, those are gone. He's gutted those, which means we need more oil and gas. And so if you had actually given a damn about the cost of oil, you would have encouraged people to buy those, that rooftop solar and so forth, left those subsidies in place rather than gutted them. So when you hear him talking about the price of oil, he doesn't actually care. But that's also obvious in the fact that, you know, the action that he's taken in the Middle East is what has spiked the cost of oil and gas. Yes, Donald Trump did this, the way they used to include those signs on the pumps with Joe Biden. I did that. Really? He didn't do it at the time either. That was all left over from Donald Trump's COVID mess and then the war in Ukraine and everything else.
Yeah, and when you think about it, it really is kind of insane that, well, of course, all of this is kind of insane, but this particular part of it where Trump created this problem, he created the crisis, he walked right into it, clearly didn't plan for it. Of course, the administration is saying, oh, yeah, we knew that they
totally.
Could totally shut down.
We meant to do that.
Yeah, as
sure.
if that this was their plan.
Yeah.
I mean, so in other words, they either didn't plan for it or they planned very badly for it in this assumption that they are making that suddenly it's going to be okay. It is not going to be okay.
818-985-5735. Oh, Andrew, I sort of cut you off there. Do we say goodbye to you? Are you there, Andrew? Thank you for the call, sir.
And we also can encourage our California Governor Newsom to make it easier for solar panels to be installed on our homes, because he's just been making it more difficult. And then lastly, I wanted to encourage people to listen to the Ralph Nader Hour on Sunday on KPFK and hear how the Democratic Party has helped to get us into all this mess with the Trump administration. The corporate Democrats are actually working against us common folks, and not being much better. Well, being better, but not too much better than the Republicans right now. So please all listen to the Ralph Nader Hour on Sunday.
Thank you, Andrew. I appreciate that. 818-985-5735. I might have a thing or two to say about how much worse one party is than another, but I ain't got time for that for the moment. So let me get to, because Harold is calling in from Santa Barbara. Hey, Harold, welcome to the broadcast, sir. How do you feel about opening up these oil platforms right off your beautiful coast there down in Santa Barbara, Harold?
I'm highly upset, but I got Dizzy on my side. I mean, Dizzy spanked him before, so she'll probably spank him again. But more importantly, when I get my land back from Jack Benjamin of ESRI that he stole from me, I'll dedicate a park in memory of Donald Trump. Maybe that will make them give in, huh? What do you think?
Well, now, why would you give a park? I don't know the other thing you're talking about, but why would you open a park with Donald Trump's name on it?
Wait a minute. I think I got a Trump moment. I don't know.
Oh, man. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the call, Harold. I appreciate it. 818-985-5735. As usual, we wonder where all the lady callers are. Why is it only the dudes who like calling into the broadcast? Unless we sort of push them. Well, now, anyway, I think we're out of time. Largely because Desi went on and on about that whole solar thing.
Listen, yeah. I'm sorry to have gone on and on and on about
right.
it, but
I'll let
you know,
it go.
Listen, I think it's very clear when you look at, for example, in the United Nations, one of the United Nations top leaders said today, look, this is very clearly showing how the Iran war that Trump has instigated is actually causing the kind of demand destruction that really scares the oil company, the oil companies. It proves that the only truly secure, it seems, the only truly secure energy system is one that is renewable, that, you know, you can't embargo the sun, you cannot shut down the wind.
Oh, give them time, they'll figure that out. But I do think that it has encouraged yet again, as if they needed another reminder after the Ukraine war started, has reminded, you know, nations like Germany, France, Spain, Italy, so forth, those European countries that have no access on their own to these fossil fuels, that, yeah, they need to not rely on the U.S. They need to not rely on Russia. They need to come up with their own plans for power. And if anything else, this is encouraging them to do exactly that yet again. And I should have mentioned the escaped uranium when we had the caller earlier who was asking about the nuclear plant at Zaporizhia. But the escaped uranium from Iran that escaped on Donald Trump's watch while he's pretending that he has obliterated the nuclear energy program in Iran. Oh, well, we will pick that up on another day, perhaps tomorrow. Until then, my thanks again to our guest today, Talia Nimmer of the Center for Biological Diversity, to our producer, Desi Doyen, to our board operator, Will, and to all of you who spent a portion of your day or night with us. It's always appreciated, always an honor. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, you can download them all for free at bradblog.com. Drop me email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, you will find me at The Brad Blog and Desi Doyen at Green News Report. We'll see you at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Listening to the broadcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.